Welcome to Booktopia On, and today we are talking about genre versus literature, the debate. And I'm joined by John Purcell, Ben Hunter, and Sarah McDooling. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
All right, just launch into it.
Well, I want to start by defining this, because I don't even know if I believe in it as an adequate way to define books.
Yeah,
like,
I don't
what
know
are
why,
we, what
I don't,
constitutes,
I don't see how it's a debate.
Is this like a, are we saying that literature are books that improve the mind and genre are books that are just pure entertainment? Or are we saying that literature is non-commercial and genre is commercial? What are we saying? What's the way, where are we drawing this line in the sand? John?
You're the oldest. Come on.
I think we're pretty clear. I think the market's pretty clear about what's literature and what's genre. And I think people who are screaming up and down about genre are pretty clear about what genre is. And they're constantly defining genre and trying to grab more and more scope and more space for genre to own and to legitimize genre in so many different areas. Who was it the other day who got in big trouble on Twitter? Philippa Gregory got in big trouble on Twitter because of an article she did with New York Times, I think, about that she wasn't writing genre fiction or something like that. And the world exploded because she does write genre, even though she doesn't think she writes genre. She wants to be thought of in a different way as a sort of historical fiction writer who is more on the literary end and expects a Booker Prize anytime soon.
So we're saying that it's more about the marketplace and how authors are perceived and how their work is perceived.
I wouldn't say that, but yes, we are.
I think that's like, I'm tempted to swear.
I think that is
a fallacy. I think it's not a good way of looking at books. That's my argument. I think we can define it better.
Well, good and bad?
Yeah. Like, I honestly think it comes down to good books and bad books. And it's not about... I don't even think it's about... Probably the best way that I've ever heard it described is that literature is a book that written with the intent to improve your mind and broaden your thinking. And genre is written with the intent to entertain you. That's probably the closest I've come. But then I totally reject the idea that a book that is written with no more lofty goal than to entertain you is without value. I think that there's great value there. I don't understand why escapism is a bad word. Like, why is escapism literature looked down on?
I don't think it's looked down. I think one of the biggest problems that happens is when you cross-pollinate, is when people start to try and... Because we work in hyperbole. We constantly talk about books in ridiculous terms. The fantastic, best-selling, greatest, most bestest, awesomest book.
Awesomest is the one.
Yeah.
When you say.
That's my favourite.
And I think we get a little bit caught up, and it's difficult to market all these books in the way you want. But you want to sort of say, this is the best book in this sphere of writing. And this is the greatest book in this sphere of writing. This is, well... We don't. We say this is the best book, and that causes people in your neighbour in this other genre or this other area tier of writing to go, "Oi, you what?" And when things like the Booker Prize lists are announced, that gets a lot of people annoyed because they're saying that it's an award for a particular kind of writing, or and you don't see certain writers ever listed in those, even though they're killing it. They're selling millions around the world, and they've got an audience that loves them and thinks they're the best writer in the world, they're never going to get on that booker list.
Yeah.
Now, why is that? Why aren't they ever going to get on that booker list?
Because it's all about perception. I think that this is all ridiculous, really. Like, I only see good books and bad books, and that goes through into history. So, like...
Or do you collect them in groups?
Yeah, like...
Good for such and such. Good for the other.
Okay. I think that there's two lenses that we can put on it. There's good books versus well-written books versus sloppily written books. And then there's also the books that are written with an intent beyond entertainment, and then ones that are just written with entertainment. And with those two lenses, I can't verse one against the other. There's too much at play.
Do you really think any literary author sitting there going, I really hope this doesn't entertain anyone?
Yeah, exactly. The whole idea that... that you can only write a book that will improve your mind if it's not entertaining is ridiculous to me. So a book that is literary, and I'm using air quotes like crazy right now. No, what were you going to say?
Well, do you think do you think literature is about improving someone's mind? Does the person sit down and go, I'm going to improve my reader's mind now?
I'm just throwing that out there as I'm desperately trying to find a definition for a literary novel that makes sense to me.
But people seem to have it, though. Like, when I talk to people about books now, friends and family who aren't in the book industry, and they say, oh, what genre is that book or something? And if I say literary, they go, oh, I know exactly what you mean. They think of, more classical, well-written, sort of
highly regarded.
Not things like YA, that's literally what people think when I know they think that. That's why I think it's just born from society needing everything to belong in some little
but we can do better than that. We can nut this out. I think we can look beyond that.
I have a really simple stance with everything. It's like, I don't care what it is, as long as I enjoy it. I have no judgments of what people like to read or watch. As long as you enjoy it, that's what matters to me. So I don't care if it's literary, quote unquote, or YA or crime.
The
or
air
anything.
Quotes are thick. I don't think anyone said literary yet without air quoting. I think it's a lot about how you read as well. So I think that you can get
why
a book.
You read.
Yeah, when I read a book that's, so I do a lot of YA reading for this job,
mm-hmm.
and when I read a book that's, say it's like a YA fantasy adventure, and it's pretty much written to be entertaining, mm-hmm. I think that I have a mindset that I read those mm-hmm. books in where I start looking at the characters and the plot and how it all fits yeah. together, and because I love just the simple art of storytelling, I can get immense pleasure out of liking or disliking a book for not giving me what I want in terms of just simple storytelling. And so, there's value in both is what I'm saying.
And
I agree
because when I read books for a very specific reason, and it comes back to your word that you said, escapism. Like I don't dislike books. Like I like fantasy as my main genre, fantasy and sci-fi, for one very important reason. It is not set in our reality. Because I have to live in my reality every single day. And there's a lot of, and to swear word here, going on in your everyday life. And yes, all these other books, fantasy and sci-fi, have really heavy topics in them a lot of the time, and they have bad things happen, people die, But it feels detached because it's not in our society. That's why I enjoy it. And so while I still enjoy reading, I've been reading some crime for you, Sarah, and I really enjoy that and all that, but it's in this world and it's a lot heavier in that for me. So
separate argument again, because this is what, so are we saying now that literary is realism and everything else is genre?
No.
Because no strongly.
Yeah, well, Mervyn Peake wouldn't agree with you either.
Yeah.
There's a lot of writers who write beautiful. This is the thing, is that there are literary writers who've written genre, there are genre writers who have written literary mm-hmm. titles. They cross over the line all the time. I mean, people will put Jane Austen in the romance section for the rest of the time.
And you said yourself in our Jane Austen podcast, there are people who will read a Jane Austen novel and they will get from that a charming romance. And then there are other people who will read it and take on like moral lessons mm-hmm. and read it differently. I think so often it's about how you read as much as it is about the book. This is a very complicated thing and I feel very passionately about it, in case you can't tell. I've got amazing amounts of notes that just poured out of me in the 40 minutes before this podcast. And so these are the authors that spring to my mind as examples of people who can't be shoved in one category or the other. Sorry for all the paper rustling. So Neil Gaiman, Margaret Atwood, Cormac McCarthy, Kazuo Ishiguro, David Mitchell, Alice Hoffman, Tolkien, Lewis Carroll. They would all read things that could be called fantasy, which you stick in the genre title, but these are all well-regarded authors who are also considered to be literary. And if you can have that amount of crossover, then where do you draw the line? The line is obviously not as defined as many people think, to the point where you can't have an argument of literature versus genre, because really what you're arguing is good book versus bad book.
But this is just where I think it comes down to people needing things to belong in a certain category, you know?
Mm.
And didn't you say once, John, that, you know, you, when you get a book and it belongs in so many different shelves or so many different genres or areas, and you go, oh, it's so annoying, where do I put this book?
But that's a good
book. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. But people want it to fit neatly in this section, and that goes with everything.
Well, there's practicality in that as well. If you walked into a bookshop and...
You just said
imagine, yeah. Or you walked into a bookshop and one side said good, the other side went, yeah.
Like, I guess I see the need to categorise books, but what I don't understand is the distinction of what makes a book literary.
So what about... let's get away from the book itself. What about the person coming to the book? Because there's education, there's intelligence, there's all these different things. Emotional strength at the time. There's a whole range of things you bring. You bring to a book. So
what day of the week is it?
Yeah.
There are some books people pick up and go, this is impenetrable. And someone overhears them and goes, that was the easiest book I've ever read. You know,
yeah.
So
yeah.
There are different standards of reader, just as much as there are different standards of product.
And we've discussed before as well how sometimes you won't be able to read a book and then you'll return to it years later and it'll be just what you need.
I've done that, yeah.
So yeah, I really feel like these, to put an accurate description on a book is impossible because you have to take into account the reader as well as the author's intent.
Do you think it maybe comes down to that we have, these genres have their tropes, right? And so even if a book crosses over many of them, if it sort of ticks most of the tropes in this one genre, that's why we allocate it to there, so that if someone walking into a bookstore wants this and this, they know to go to the crime section because that's where they're going to get most of their boxes ticked.
It's practical, but I think it's limiting in a way. Like, storytelling is... Ben, you look so upset. I really want your thoughts now because you just seem like the weight of the world is on your shoulders.
Oh, I feel it, man. I feel it.
In Atlas pose.
Just remember, this is the most dangerous place you can walk into.
I know.
Is there anyone who's in favour of literature at the moment, speaking out on social media or anything in favour of literature, is in trouble.
What's your argument for literature?
I think... all I want to say is that I think genrefication of art and creativity in any field, not just the novel, is necessary.
Mm.
It's something we do as booksellers, it's something we do as readers, it's something we do as librarians, it's something we will continue to do as creators of culture and curators of culture forevermore. And I think there's enormous value within genre as an idea. Take the example of crime fiction. You set up a bunch of tropes over time or expectations in what kind of structure or representations you're going to see in a reading experience. And then you have this framework that an author gets to play with. You know, it's like... it's like giving an artist a canvas.
Templates and stuff.
This is what you work with, and now you get to play with that. And then that heightens the experience for a reader. If we start from tabula rasa every time we create a piece of fiction, I think we'd be in a lot of trouble. And I think, we can talk about escapism versus aspirational reading till the cows come home. For me, all reading is aspirational.
All fiction is fantasy as well. It's just a matter of degree. So then it becomes a game of, you've got all these different genres, including, you'll include realism in that, and then what, in the fantasy and romance and crime genres, you get to a certain level of complexity or an author gets a certain reputation within the marketplace and then they hop over to literary. Is that how it works? Because... to me, that seems ridiculous.
It's very difficult to hop over to literary. I mean, Peter Temple won the Miles Franklin, but I think you'd still find him sitting in the crime section. There are a lot of people like that who are sort of... Well, I mean, one example of the opposite is Wolf Hall. Wolf Hall is still plonked in your modern contemporary fiction or your fiction or your literary area, even though it's definitely historical fiction. You wouldn't find it sitting next to Kate Forsyth. You wouldn't find it in those, even next to Philippa Gregory, generally. They'd put it in some other section because of the Booker, I think.
And yeah, so, but if she can do it, why does it not translate to other writers of historical fiction?
Well, I think we have to talk about quality, because quality is something which we, no one likes to talk about, because it requires effort. And effort is horrendous at this time. And reading widely and trying to read the finest books that have ever been written, and what are the finest books that have ever been written, you listen to history, they can give you some tips on what is great fiction and what isn't great fiction. But you, by doing that, you develop your own standard, and then you can make judgments by yourself based on those. And if you've read the entire works of a particular genre fiction author, and then maybe dabbled in a few other authors, then your perspective on what's great fiction may not be the finest, because you haven't read widely enough or up and down the scale of writing. The more you can see, the more you've experienced in writing, the better your judgment's going to be. I just feel that's just one of those basic things. People don't like to talk about it, though.
But you don't think readers develop mind blocks where they've decided that they don't like genre fiction, and so they will never read anything that has any element that seems to them to be genre?
For me, when I feel that I'm being pushed along by a plot that is boring or obvious, I feel like someone's got a knife in my back telling me, like I've been hijacked by someone and getting pushed along against my will, because I don't care. I don't really want to go down this path. And yet that's the mechanism that I'm involved with. Sometimes I'll find great writings within the mechanism. And I'm like, you don't need the mechanism. Sometimes there are great literary writers who feel, if I'm going to make some money, I better put a plot in here. And they jam a plot in and it ruins the book. There's been a lot of examples over the last little while where I felt, the great classic example is Thomas Hardy. Thomas Hardy can go for 300 pages, and then a man with a gun walks in and everyone gets blown up. And you're like, what? Why? Yeah, and he sells, and that means he sells that particular book, and people tell other people to read it, and it all moves on. And I think there's mechanisms within fiction that are so regular, they just become boring. And whenever I hit them, I just get bored and I stop reading.
See, I mean, there's so many interesting angles to this, because you could say, talking about Thomas Hardy, and you could say, okay, there's a lot of templates at play there that have meshed in a way that makes it original, right? So it's hard to define it in any one genre, but it's taken elements from lots of genres and created something seemingly new. So is it just more that the harder a book is to define in a genre, the better it becomes, or the more interesting it becomes to people who've read widely enough that they're sick of the template?
It's the mind of the author. Original minds see things originally. Like, I was thinking about Dan Rodrondo the other day, and I was thinking about a film of Dan Rodrondo, something I would never want to have to see. In the beginning, the first three pages of Dan Rodrondo by George Eliot, Daniel enters a room and there's gambling going on. He's being observed by someone else and he's observing the room. Film would just have a picture of him walking in the room and then panning around and showing the room, and then the picture of the heroine looking across at him, and that's all we get. But thank God we have George Eliot, who actually goes straight into the head of Dan O'Drona. So I see everything there is about Dan O'Drona, because everything is explained in this moment. And that's what I'm after. I can see Dan O'Drona out of the room myself. I don't need a camera to show me. It's that's dull, and it's not enough information. I want far more information, and someone like George Eliot is definitely willing to give me more information than anyone could possibly want.
Didn't they say of on George Eliot, didn't they say of Middlemarch that it was the first like fictional novel that people were not ashamed, that didn't have any stigma attached to it, to say that you'd read it?
Really?
I heard that once, yeah. Mm. I wish I could cite where from, because I don't know, I feel like I heard once that Middlemarch was said to be the first novel that people weren't ashamed to say that they owned. Whereas at the time, there was once a time where if you were reading fiction, regardless of who wrote it, that it was all considered frivolous, and that the only way to improve your mind, or the only reading you should be doing, is nonfiction.
Well, even then, like if you read it Radcliffe?
Madame Radcliffe. Yeah, what's the Mysteries of Udolpho.
Yeah, that one. You read her and then you read Jane Austen, or if you read, even if you read Fanny Burney, or read Jane Austen.
But those comparisons drive me mental because they're doing such different things.
No, they're doing very similar things, and it's really how clear they are on observing emotional behaviour, motives, intelligence, speech, all these different things that are ratcheted up at such a high level. You don't ever really find fault with these people when their characters do stuff. I mean, when I read Middlemarch, you meet the characters at the beginning of Middlemarch, and by the time it's the end, you feel like you cross the whole universe with these people. And yet you could almost, without any doubt, point out the similarities between the characters at the end and the characters at the beginning, but you've seen the growth that they've had. As an author, to get that growth happening on a character is so difficult to get. So Dorothea at the beginning of Middlemarch and Dorothea at the end of Middlemarch are definitely the same person.
Mm.
But life has worked on them. And that is genius. Like, and that doesn't happen in fiction, most fiction. And that's the thing that stands out, like, as people refer to it and do shorthand and all this sort of stuff, but to do it in real time, in a sense, as she does in that big fat book, is extraordinary. And that is genius that stands out amongst a desert, really.
Like, yeah. Well, yes, but it's also a case of that is possible to do regardless. Like, you could, and I wish I could think of an example, but, like, you could have that sort of character development if you were writing a fantasy novel, or if you were writing, you know, even if it were just a romance, you can still delve into character that deeply. It's just that once you do, your book stops being seen as genre and it starts being seen.
No, it has to be. For that kind, it has to be note perfect at all times for every universal reader to see it.
Yeah.
And that's what most writers can't do. I mean, I think that there are very few great writers. And there are lots of writers, tons of writers, generations of writers, but few that are great. And most of those leave this repercussion and people copying them going out and out and out from that. And we fill our shells with these people. They're not the leading lights.
But then does it come down to what you define as great? Like you said, I only think there's a few great writers in the world, but that I might think that your writers that you think are great are
well,
not good.
But if we go into relativism and that sort of thing, but there's no point in education at all.
This is why I don't believe in this debate. Like, yeah. I think it's an interesting discussion, but I don't really
think
there's
any
an
universals?
Answer. I think that there are good books and bad books, and the way that I define it, it's like, look, I've heard this analogy a bunch of times. I believe I've even heard it from you, Mr. Purcell, that genre fiction is like fast food. And, and you can deny having said that. Maybe I heard it elsewhere. And literature is like fine dining. And I
just want to be clear about what literature is. Most of the stuff that is classed as literature these days, I don't even rate. Like, I don't, it doesn't.
Yeah, because it's kind of an empty qualification. I feel
yeah,
like
photocopies
it's
of photocopies. Most literature is photocopies
that
of photocopies.
Now, maybe, yeah.
I feel like we should be able to move beyond it. And I would go with a food analogy. My food analogy is yes. So there are books that are like fine dining.
What's wrong with fast food?
Well, I don't think it's fast food though. I don't think that you've got two different things there. You've got, like, let's say a perfectly poached egg. It's like, it seems like a simple thing to do, but I don't know if any of you are masters at it, but poaching an egg to perfection is a
very
skill. And when someone does it right, it's perfect. And sometimes it's all you want. And but there's pretty much one ingredient and it's not going to blow your mind with its array of flavors, and it's not going to be like something you've never had before, but it's bloody good. And I think that you can appreciate the poached egg as much as you can appreciate cordon bleu cooking, and that life allows for both, and that you should have both, because if you can't appreciate the simple thing, you're never really going to fully understand and appreciate the complicated thing. That's my food analogy for this argument.
Anyone else got a food analogy?
I'm getting hungry.
We could do it with music as well. Like, how great is a amazing, pitch perfect, catchy earworm of a pop song? But also, you know, is there any point in comparing that to some more experimental music that is equally mind blowing? But this is
like
variety,
classic music,
you know. And when you get so caught up in defining things, I think you really miss out. You miss out on so much.
I think that the problem we have largely is we have one word for literature and then another one for classics. The classics run across every genre you can possibly think of, and literature runs across every genre you can possibly think of. Classics generally is history shaking down all the books that are on the universal shelves and trying to help us choose the best ones, right? That's the sort of time having a good old shake there and shaking out the best ones for us. Literature is unfortunately so close to us that it is difficult to
make those judgments, because it takes time. We get left with Frankenstein and Pride and Prejudice, but that took how long?
Yeah.
You've got Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde that stands the test of time. I'm trying to think of all of the things that, if it were written now from a plot point of view, like Robinson Crusoe, would probably get shelved in adventure thrillers or something. Like, it would be considered genre fiction now, but if it's still around in 100 years, then suddenly it's a classic.
Pride and Prejudice written today, you know. Like, think of how it was rewritten for, say, Bridget Jones. That movie is what? Rom-com? Rom-com.
Rom-com.
It's like, but it was Pride and Prejudice, which is a classic. So
I think it's so important to define for yourself as a reader what you want from a book and what you feel is good. And just generally in the world, obviously, we're going to hopefully commend the well-written books.
Mm-hmm.
And if that means slapping the literature label on them, then so be it. But ultimately, read widely and read as widely as you can and take benefit and take something of value out of everything that you read, even if it's just the worst piece of drivel that you've ever come across. Understand why, so that you can take that forward with you.
I don't mind slapping labels on things, I really don't, but I just, yeah, my argument just is very simple. As long as you enjoy it, that's what matters to me.
People are very sensitive about it. So people say, I don't mind this and I don't mind that and I'm open to the other, and then, but if you actually start having a go at their books, they're like, I do mind. I mind very much. So you've got to,
then it comes down to the person. As I said, I love a lot of fantasy and YA, and a lot of people would look at that and go, you're not an intelligent reader or something, but I don't care what they think.
Every genre, though, has degrees of,
Absolutely.
Just read good books from whatever they're marketed as. It's just such a reductive argument.
I'm a young person. I've come to Sarah, who I know has worked in the book industry for a long time, has read lots and lots of books. You're going to make some distinctions between the books when you make recommendations. Say they want, I haven't got much time, I just want to read the good ones first. Sarah, can you give me a list of the best books that you've read? What are you going to use?
This is why every time this conversation comes up, it turns into some deep philosophical discussion about where the person is at their life and what they want out of this reading experience. And do they just want to escape from life for a while? Do they really want to have their mind blown? And
isn't your next question, if someone asks you that, isn't your next question going to be, what kind of book do you want to read?
So you put
them in categories. So someone might say, yeah, life's really heavy at the moment, I just want something light and fun, I want something fluffy, I want something to make me feel good about romance or something. And so then you'll be like, okay. And then that sort of collection will switch into your mind. Even if you don't agree with it, you know, that's sort of the genre that it's fallen into.
Mm.
Can I just steer this to our uncomfortable guest, Ben? Because Ben is someone who does enjoy modern literature more than all the rest of us here. What is it that you... It's true. What is it that you look for in those books? What is it that gives you... You get out of the sort of the more modern lit titles, the ones that are sort of destined for either short lists or long lists?
I read to get better at living in our little world. I think if you want to read for escapism, that's great, but... I've got a TV, and video effects are really good, and there are a lot of cool video games out there that you can all escape in, and that's so easy. Reading's hard. Reading is really hard for a lot of people, and reading's hard for me. I'm not a great reader. I'm not a super smart guy. I'm not a genius. I read because it is hard, because it helps me to be a better person, or helps me to understand the people around me a little bit better, or get something out of the world we sort of inhabit.
I fully agree with that.
I'm preparing to escape. I'm literally preparing, you know, to time travel or something. That's why I read fantasy.
I feel that you can do both, and that it can actually be a simultaneous experience. You can, shock horror, escape your life and get away from the world.
Absolutely.
And read something that is going to teach you to be a better human being.
Everything that I read takes you away from what you're used to, even if it is set in this world. But
I thought that was extremely eloquent. Ode to reading just then, and
Ben's
it made my heart sore.
His two
and
little paragraphs that he said have just said enough. You know?
I say I wanted a round of applause that speech, but I also want to say that I don't draw that line to say I still think yes, you can draw that line between watching something on TV and reading, because that is the ultimate passive
books.
Entertainment is to sit in front of a show that just shows you everything. Tells you how to think with a music soundtrack.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, I think that there's more benefit in reading even the most simple. I can't find a word that isn't derogatory towards genre fiction that I feel is bad. Like, because I think that every category of book that you can dream up under the sun, every subgenre that exists, will have examples of truly beautifully written quote-unquote literary examples, and then down the other end of the spectrum will be something that's self-published by someone who can't construct a sentence, and you know, there's a spectrum that can be applied to every genre. And you know, I'm really getting off topic, but I just feel like the escapist versus improvement of the mind argument doesn't hold true for me, because
all reading improves my
kind of, but also if it doesn't, there is value in.
But what you said about even if it's bad,
yeah,
you figure out why it was bad and you learn from it. Is that
that's
also
kind of
your argument?
So I read a lot of crime, and you know, the really truly great crime novels that stick with you will delve deep into character and give you have a lot more meat on their bones. But even the really sort of simple ones are beautiful to me because of that framework. Like we were talking before about having the templates and finding them boring. I see beauty in them. I see if I am reading
comforting?
Them.
Is it
because
you always know what's going to happen?
It's like the same thing constructed in a slightly different way. And like, to me, there's a pattern in it, and it's like, it's
and how
pure and beautiful. It's like maths, and I hate maths. I'm saying this as someone who is not a numbers person, I'm a words person, but the framework around something, around these genres where you can say, you know, this is a romance or this is a crime novel or whatever, I love it. Like, I love it. It's like variations on a theme, and I can gobble it up and love it every single time. And it's, to me, it's like a familiar tune, slightly different.
Well, isn't this the argument that we have of tropes are tropes for a reason? Like, the things that come back into stories time and time again are usually there because they work.
Yeah, cliches strike to the heart of matters, and the only reason that they get a bad rap is because they become tired. And if you've seen it delivered the same way a million times, then when you get it again, you're bored. But the really great genre writers, let's say, can take a cliche and sneak it in and give it to you in a way that maybe you haven't seen before, but then even just recognizing it upside down or sideways or whatever, it just gives me a thrill. Like I love it, and I love especially when that's teamed with really beautiful prose or really well-rounded deep characters. And I don't care if they're in space or if they're fighting dragons or whatever they might be doing. Storytelling to me is, it's honestly like, it's humanity's greatest gift. Like, since we scrawled on cables to now, like, we've been telling stories. It's what allows us to look at the past, and what allows us to see into the future is telling stories. Why would you ever want to take like one of our greatest gifts and slap a bunch of restrictions on it and say these ones are good and these ones are worthless? Like, why? It baffles my mind.
So you've forgiven Thomas Hardy for Jude the Obscure?
Judy Obscure just destroyed me. Like, and that in itself is amazing, like that a story can really do that. But I will be haunted by that book until my dying day, and you can't say that about a great many books. I am angry that I read it, but I also love that I'm angry that I read it. Like,
oh, for sure, because it made an impact.
Yeah, huge impact. You know, I just, yeah, I really, this whole debate just makes me kind of confused, and I just want a better way of looking at it. I think we can find a better way of categorizing books than the one that we've got at the moment, because I think it's bound up too much in snobbery, I want to say.
I don't think there's any snobbery left. I'm probably the ultra snob, where I'm so snobby that I don't even bother being snobby around anyone, because there's no one to sort of impress with my snobbery, because no one knows what I'm talking about. Yeah, most of the books that I'm interested in, I hold highest and most dear, are dead to everyone. They're forgotten and not even part of the conversation. So you can't really call someone snobbish if they mention books you've never even heard of. Like, it's not yeah, favouring anything that is in part of the conversation anymore. So the ones that get me are the ones who wear it. So someone who reads all the Booker Prize winners because they've been put as Booker Prize winners, and only does those. Someone who makes sure that everyone's reading it in book club before they start reading it, and then tells everyone they're reading because everyone else is reading book club. That kind of thing, and it's generally around this sort of modern literature area, sort of the Oprah Winfrey book club period, where everyone was very proud of the books they were reading and they were jamming it down everyone's throat. That kind of stuff, I can see that being annoying to everybody.
It's as annoying as the opposite end of the spectrum, which is people who have picked their genre of choice and will not read
move
outside,
yeah,
of it, and will like lecture people on why it's good. I mean, I do that, but I like to think I like to think I'd give every genre a shot, though. Like, there's none that I don't like.
Well, there are people who won't read a book that doesn't end well, and I think to myself, you're missing out.
I love the ones that don't end well.
Yeah, but I like, I hate the ones that don't end well for the sake of not ending well, though. Like, you know, so a book like Jude the Obscure gutted me. A book like A Little Life destroyed me. That's great, because they're amazing books, and just the pure force of the emotional impact is impressive to me. But then there are books that you feel like have slapped on an unhappy ending to be more literary, and they always ring a sour note in me, because I've seen the pattern, I've seen the template that we're on, and when they flip it at the end just for effect, I get furious, because I'm like, you could have gone on, you could have finished the journey that you started, it would have been okay, you did really well with this template, I enjoyed it. Like, don't flip it just because you feel like there's something inherently,
like, they want the shock factor,
yeah,
or something
stupid about a happy ending. Both have value.
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like we could talk about this for a long, long time. And Ben, I don't think we
even
needed
like
to be here.
Really,
I think we
deeply
just
upset Ben.
I think we have. This was hard.
He was like, I can't listen to another word. So I'm going to stop
I'm
it there.
Sorry,
to save Ben.
We didn't mean to break you.
I think they did. They enjoyed that. Well, no, that was really good. Thank you. And thanks for listening, everyone. Don't forget to join us every Wednesday at 11 a.m. for more topics on what's hot in the book world.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.